champagne pop. It's my house, come on, turn it up. Hear a knock on the door and the night begins. Cause we've done this before, so you come on in. Make yourself at my home, tell me where you've been.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
Hola there. Yes, it is good to be back. Hello there, and welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs back with you. I'm rested.
The players are back, and we are back.
The players are back. The band is back together. The glue, and yours truly, the Gibbs. We are back.
You had plenty of Gribbs last week.
Plenty of Gribbs. Now we get back to normal. Business, as they say, is about to pick up. The Browns players have reported here to Berea today for the beginning of the world order.
I didn't mind that.
Thank you.
Not the whisper, though.
You like just the first part, though.
Yes.
World order.
Yes.
So that begins today. Obviously, we've got some transactions to talk about. The Browns have released Ifo.
Ekpre. Olomou.
Yes. Good. Good job. Good work together, the two of us there. They've released him. The knee just not advancing.
Is that what it was?
Yeah. That's the only reason.
Okay. Because
they just felt it medically. It was, and remember, it was a devastating injury.
Right.
Not just
$2 million
a normal
policy paid out.
Thank goodness. I'm glad he has that.
Yes.
And I think if the Browns thought that there was really any chance that he could play for them, you'd have him under contract on a seventh round salary for two more years.
Correct.
You'd keep him. Yeah. So they don't feel that that is possible, unfortunately. And then they moved on from him. Dante Whitner, no surprise there. The only surprise really was the timing of it.
Yeah.
There was no surprise on that it was going to happen.
And that was the question that you and I continually asked.
Sure.
You know, the week after, you know, weeks after Carlos Dansby was released, you know, right in front of free agency, if was there going to be one more? You know, it was Dwayne Bowe, Dansby same day, and we kept asking, is there going to be any more? And a lot of people probably understood and realized who we were talking about.
Sure.
Because we had made mention months.
Yeah, months ago.
Months ago. You know, of the guys that were going to be on the block that did not fit the parameters that Sashi Brown, Paul DePodesta, Andrew Berry, and Hugh Jackson were going to do business.
Absolutely. And so that came and that went. Now the Browns are back themselves, which is good. And, you know, now you look at that safety room and you wonder if that becomes, you know, will there be a draft there? You got Raheem Moore, who you signed, former second round pick out of UCLA, who's looking to resurrect his career.
You've Jalen got Ramsey.
Jalen Ramsey, possible at number two, obviously. You've got Jordan Poyer, who played very well, a couple interceptions, filling in for Sean Gibson last year. Then you've got Ibrahim Campbell, who I know that the last staff really, really liked. And I think, obviously, the move tells you that they are somewhat high on this staff as well, that the guy out of Northwestern got to play a little bit as a rookie and somebody that they are looking to maybe move into that strong safety spot. They are a very intelligent player.
Chris, in my speaking to Chris Tabor, it went Johnson Bademosi, Ibrahim Campbell, Tank Carter.
As his top special teams
as
guys.
As his top special team guys. And Marlon Moore was.
Where's the love for Marlon?
Marlon Moore was. No, it was there. But again, as if you recall, with the lack of wide receiver depth down towards the end of the year.
He had to play receiver.
His reps dropped, production dropped, and those guys just continued to be very consistent.
Yeah, so you like that, and it's good to hear. So that those are kind of the roster moves. The other set of moves from the Browns today is that they have signed. They've got their restricted free agents have signed, and they've come to terms with the guys that were their exclusive rights guys as well. So restricted free agents Austin Pastore and Scott Solomon have signed, and exclusive rights players Travis Coons, Darius Jennings, and offensive lineman Caleb Johnson have signed. So those guys are here, and they are ready to go. I got to go down there and see a lot of the players that were here today. Connor Shaw is back. His wrist is healed. He's looking to get back into work. Big play Gare flew in from WrestleMania last night himself.
I ran into Joe Thomas. Terrell Pryor.
Uh-huh.
Again, another guy in a tender as well.
You
saw Heartline pulling out this morning.
You know who I got to talk to as well down there? In the cafe is back, and I got to say hello to the newest member of the Browns, Robert Griffin III.
Did you?
And guy just looks like a fantastic athlete.
Yeah.
Couldn't have been nicer. I told him, you know, we were on the radio show, and he's like, oh, yeah, yeah, thanks for the interview. And nice guy, and very excited to have him here, and good to see. And just, you know, the vibe I got from a couple of the players, and we'll get to talk to players throughout the week here, but I just kind of said, you know, what was the takeaway from, you know, the Hughes talk? And basically, without going into the specifics of what the message was, they were all fired up and were like, this guy gets it. And this guy is a tremendous communicator. And obviously, one of the things we talked about, players always have loved Hugh Jackson, and it seems like that has started anew.
Yeah, and I think that...
How important is that, by the way, that first meeting with a head coach to kind of set the tone and the expectations?
It's huge because there is... You enter that meeting with both optimism and pessimism as an athlete.
Okay.
Because you're used to doing business a certain way, and that's what kind of was going to lead me, you know, into another point about Hugh Jackson and probably a little bit more about the role that he will play, the policies that he will kind of put into effect from a communication standpoint with him as a head coach, the relationships that he's going to want to build with, you know, a majority of the players, if not all of them, the expectations that he has of them. And that's... When I get into the expectations, I would say a first meeting expectation is a few words that are going to come out of his mouth are work or hard work and physical. Those things, because they are one of three teams, I believe, if not more. I thought the report was three teams that reported this week that started today. I think it's the Browns, the Texans, and one other team maybe. And I know that
49ers.
Yeah, exactly. Started today, so they're getting in early. They've got a revamped staff, and I think that the work and the emphasis that Hugh Jackson's going to put on work and the reception by the players, that if they truly want to change the status quo, which is below 500, they have to realize that there is a lot of work ahead of them.
Yes.
So it should have been received very well. It's going to be a refreshed staff. It's a refreshed strength staff. So everything's going to feel new. Everything's going to feel excited. Everyone's going to be out of their comfort zone, wanting to prove to these coaches their value, not so much in dollars, but in their hard work.
Absolutely. And I think that this is going to be, as we said, the Hugh World Order. And we'll see what he can get out of these guys and what he can do and motivate. But I can tell you, very, very impressed overall with the tenor and the tone that head coach Hugh Jackson has set for these guys in their return to Berea today. You know, one thing I did want to just throw out there is I think it's starting to get to the point where it's almost laughable that every decision the Browns make is labeled Moneyball. The Browns are not the first team, nor will they be the last, to release veterans in their 30s making tons of money. It just happens in the NFL when the guaranteed money is dried up. Is it Moneyball that the Atlanta Falcons released Roddy White?
Nope.
No, it's just smart business. It's good business. That's what they felt that at that time with a player whose skills were where his were, although I still think Roddy White can play. Nonetheless, it just happens all around the NFL. Everything the Browns do is not Moneyball. What they are going to try to do is make sound decisions more often. And I think this offseason, if nothing else, you'll come away from it and you can call it Moneyball, even though I've just said that, so I think it's lazy. But they clearly have a plan for how they want to go about building this roster going forward.
And only because I was a quote-unquote semi-victim to something like this, I can understand why Dante Whitner came out and said what he said.
Sure.
And not so much with the money ball capitalized in his
comments.
And that
wasn't about Dante. I wasn't saying it in
relation to what he said. No. And I understand that. And it was more so the timing.
Sure.
A guy that was set to make $6 million will now not get $6 million this late into free agency, this soon before the draft. And realistically, unless Dante Whitner is going to take a severe pay cut, say $2 to $3 million, he may not sign until maybe June, July, you know, or even the start of training camp somewhere.
He could end up waiting for a spot where a team really needs him and is willing to pay
because
him a premium.
Because as we've emphasized last week, kind of in a bridge week, emphasis is shifting from free agency to the draft. People are all in on draft and pro days, and finalizing those draft boards and the visits of these draftees into the franchises and the workouts and the meetings and so on and so forth, that a guy like Dante Whitner is going to slip through the cracks. And that same thing kind of happened to me, but at a different period. I went through the offseason training. I went through the OTAs. I went through the mini camps.
Which, by the way, they could have done with Dante Whitner.
They could have done with Dante Whitner. And I got cut probably 2 weeks before training camp. So majority of teams had their 90 guys that they were going to go to camp with. And it took, you know, me finding an opportunity somewhere else in the National Football League and attending a training camp 6, 7, 8 days into camp because of an injury prior to getting signed somewhere. So it happens.
It does happen.
I wish my number was $6 million. And
he would, ah!
It hurt.
My back.
It hurt.
My neck and my back.
Yes.
So, yes, that's the one thing. You know, could it have happened earlier? Now, you look at Carlos Dansby. Didn't take long for him to find a home right here, unfortunately, in the AFC North with the Cincinnati Bengals, where I think he could be a nice playmaker.
He's going to compete to get on the field in Cincinnati.
He will. But look what they got out of A.J. Hawk.
And he'll be back.
He'll be back. I like Carlos
Vincent
Dansby's
Ray,
skill
Ray,
set.
Ray. Maluga.
Perfect.
Perfect.
There you go. It's a nice linebacker room there.
Okay. They can only play three. And sometimes two. It's and true. Sometimes one.
So probably more often than not two. Now, where Dansby is good, as we know, is as a cover linebacker.
Correct.
So I bet he'll see a lot
AJ
of time.
AJ Hawk's a first and second down linebacker.
Yeah. Dansby can become like a very effective nickelbacker at this point in his career, certainly. So he's landed. People would, you know, you think, you know.
But to get into that conversation.
Yeah.
Perfect and Vincent Ray, not happy if Dansby's going to take reps away from those because those guys are looking for a payday here in the next year, too.
Maluga, yeah, absolutely.
Maluga looking for a second contract.
Certainly.
Vincent Ray looking for a second contract. Perfect looking for a second contract. And you get a guy got to come in and steal reps from you? That's not going to go well.
We'll say well.
AJ Hawk knows his role.
In the words of the great philosopher, not my problem.
That's right. Not our problem.
Not our problem. By the way, Stephen Wisniewski was signed by the Eagles, so we can take him off the board there for the Cleveland Browns as one of the people that they were initially linked to there. I will say, you know, I do want to get into it. You know, obviously, my trip was great. Everybody, go to Puerto Vallarta. I'll give you the restaurants to go to. Swim with the dolphins. I'd recommend it. It was just an unbelievable time. Perfect weather. It was great.
I've never been to Puerto Vallarta.
Fantastic.
Okay, I've been to I've done the Cancun Riviera Maya.
So I've never done that side of Mexico.
Okay. I've done that, and I've done Cabo.
I've done Cabo.
Cabo. I've never done. There's a Four Seasons in Punta Mita,
which is Puerto Vallarta.
Which you fly into Puerto Vallarta, but then you drive 45-50 minutes through the hood of Mexico until you get your Jurassic Park like. Doors that open.
Unbelievable, though. You've got the Four Seasons there, and they built a St. Regis well.
Correct.
And so one of the nights I had dinner at the St. Regis. So it was a good 45-minute cab ride up there at a place called Carolina, which is supposed to be the best restaurant in all of Mexico. And the 8-course tasting menu, the whole deal. The dollar was so strong that it was so cheap. Go to Puerto Vallarta right now. I'll give you four restaurants that you'll come back and say those are as good as any restaurants you've ever eaten at in your life. Swim with the dolphins.
My favorite.
It was a great.
My
trip.
Favorite night at Puta Mita, which is again technically Puerto Vallarta.
Yeah, let's
say, okay, so we can say we've been there.
Yeah,
was drinking like a, I don't know, $60 sipping tequila while smoking a good cigar out on a patio and listening to like a mariachi band.
It's phenomenal.
Like, it was just like, come on, does it get any better than this?
Are you serious, bro? Does it get any better than that? You know it. It really just was great to be. It was just great to be on vacation. I mean, to have a week and the sun to come fly back into a blizzard was a little like what the what. But overall, a great, great trip. Now the Browns are back. Last night, also, you guys know that I enjoy a little wrestling from time to time. I'm gonna talk a little bit about some special things that happened last night at WrestleMania. Not necessarily for the wrestlers, but just like with a little personal slant on it. By the way, Big Play Gary Barnage was in attendance at the show last night in Dallas. Over 100,000 people were there, the largest crowd to ever see a wrestling event. So pretty cool there. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the Browns. We'll take your calls, 216-578-0850 here on Cleveland Browns Daily.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Ted Rosen now tweeted me, said, can you send out a tweet when you're done talking wrestling so I'll know when I'll turn the radio back on?
Thank you.
I'm going to talk about is not about wrestling. We're going to get the phone calls in a second. But I want to talk about two things that happened yesterday that were, in my mind, awesome. And you know, I wish that you and I, for the same reason, had got to become good friends before you went and won a Super Bowl or before you had gone to Ohio State and won a national championship. Because last night something happened to one of my very good friends that was really special. And I'm talking about a wrestler by the name of Zack Ryder. His real name is Matt Cardona, but Zack Ryder is his wrestling name. This is a guy that was, since the day he was born, all he wanted to do was become a professional wrestler. And his dream was to win the Intercontinental title at WrestleMania. And that dream started back at WrestleMania 10 when he was in the crowd. And he saw Razor Ramon. I don't know if you remember Razor Ramon won what was then the most famous ladder match of all time, beat Shawn Michaels, and won the Intercontinental title. Zack Ryder took a picture with Razor Ramon at that WrestleMania holding Razor Ramon's Intercontinental title belt. Fast forward to last night. Zack Ryder hasn't been on TV all year. He had one good run back in, would have been when WrestleMania 28 was. So about, I'll say 4 years ago.
32 minus 28 is 4.
Correct.
Okay.
So about 4 years ago. They weren't doing anything with him. He created this internet show called The Z True Long Island Story and made these skits about it. He wasn't getting over and became a cult favorite, and the fans started chanting for him over
like
guys like The Rock.
Sensation.
A YouTube sensation. He literally became, he called himself the internet champion, created a belt for it and whatever. They gave him like a 2 month kind of mini run and then just destroyed him, humiliated him, and have been treating him like garbage ever since. All he's done is get himself in the best shape, never complained, keep doing what they ask him, trying anything he wants. So they put him in this ladder match, and he wins the Intercontinental title at a ladder match at WrestleMania. And, like, I literally got to watch.
Did you cry?
No, but I was like.
No. It's okay.
No, I didn't cry.
It was a football show.
If I was there, I bet I would have cried because I would have been, like, getting to celebrate with them, and I probably would have cried.
Okay.
But I got, like, when The Miz, I got to see The Miz defend the WWE title at WrestleMania. That was, like, a great moment. It's not often that people actually really get to live their dreams. You've done it.
Yeah.
There aren't many people that actually, you know, are the guys that, you know, sit there and think, you know, everybody's done it when they're a kid, right? Where you're like, it's the bottom of the ninth, or whether it's baseball, or there's 2 seconds left, it's game seven, or it's the Super Bowl, and you are the one who does it. Well, for him, that's what this was, and he did it. After he won, he's become good friends with Razor Ramon, a.k.a. Scott Hall is the guy's name. After he won, when he went backstage, he took another picture with Scott Hall, with this time Scott Hall holding his Intercontinental title. And it was just like a full circle, just a cool moment. And so that was.
So how many years removed was this?
So it would have been 22 years removed from WrestleMania 10. 22 years later from when he took that picture with Scott Hall, holding Scott Hall's Intercontinental title, who was his hero.
Right.
Scott Hall's holding his Intercontinental title at WrestleMania. Just a cool, like,
it is very cool. And what I thought all along is that you're going to bridge to the fact that you want to play one snap or one series in the National Football League as a quarterback.
Oh, no, that's not even like on the same level as you. Honestly, for me, what it would have been was to call WrestleMania.
Okay, that with Jerry been, the King?
Yeah, with Jerry the King Lawler. That would have been my dream, but I was told I was too tall. I was close to getting an opportunity with them. I had multiple.
Too tall?
Too tall, yeah. Because if you do stuff with the wrestlers, like the guys that are billed as 6'7", who are really 6'3", or the guys who are billed as 6'3", who are really 5'11", and I'm a legitimate 6'4". It just doesn't.
And speaking of height, and this is probably besides.
So anyway, congrats to my man.
Yeah, Zach Ryder. There you go. But besides, whatchamacallit, Vince McMahon's son,
Shane,
jumping off the thing.
Off of the Hell in the Cell.
Off the Hell in the Cell, 20-something. Yeah.
Look it up on Twitter, even if you don't like wrestling.
Right.
It's worth watching.
It's crazy.
Yep.
Any human being jumping off of something 20-some feet down to next to nothing is ridiculous.
Yes.
The one other thing that I did see on the internet was Shaq entering the ring at WrestleMania. Okay?
Great segue. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yep.
And, because you're speaking of size.
Right.
Big Show, big guy. Shaq,
huge.
Looking down on Big Show.
Right.
just goes to show how big Shaq really is.
Right, and the Big Show's built as 7 feet, 500 pounds, which, I mean, he's close. But
right, but
Shaq,
I mean, he's probably more 6'9",
yeah.
Shaq 7'1".
Yeah, and all the
and
guys.
And 5 inches when you're that big? Big difference.
And what about the normal guys doing their next act? Shaq looks, my buddy Beatbox was saying, he's like, my favorite thing last night was how much bigger Shaq was than everybody. Yeah, Shaq was huge. So it was a great night for them. The other cool thing that happened to me last night, because I didn't go to WrestleMania. It was the first time since WrestleMania 19, I've only missed two. This one, this last one, for a variety of reasons, which we won't discuss. And then 24, when my daughter Arden was due 2 weeks later. So.
Right.
Couldn't risk it. So, anyway, so Arden, my daughter, and I watched all of WrestleMania with me, and she was like calling out things that were going to happen in matches, student of the game, and it was just cool to have a bonding moment like that with your child over something that you love and that she turned out to love, and it was just a really neat thing. So, it was a real special night for me for getting to see my friend literally live his dream and then getting to share that time with my daughter, which was cool because I had taken her to the Royal Rumble when we were in Orlando. It just so happened to work out, so we went, and she kind of started to get into it. My son, not impressed.
Good for him.
He was just like, no. But my daughter was into it, and last night they did a really great thing with the women's division. They got rid of the Divas title. They called it the Women's Championship. They put a new belt, and Ric Flair's daughter won, and it was
– surprise.
It was good, but – she had sent a video to my daughter, so my daughter thought it was like super cool, and it was a neat thing there. Gibbs, you watched last night, I'm sure, right?
I did not.
Thank you.
No,
I'm sure.
I'm.
I would have bet. I would have bet a lot of money that Gibbs was not watching last night.
Oh no,
I had every intent on going to a buddy's house, but we had the kids this weekend. We had a 5-hour gymnastics match yesterday.
Oh.
And some things, it just didn't happen, and I was not pleased, especially when I woke up this morning and started seeing, like, all the highlights and the Shane McMahon and then The Rock and, you know.
What did The Rock do?
The Rock came out.
The Rock came out and talked smack with the Wyatts and did a little promo, and then John Cena
and
made his
Cena
return.
Came in to
and
help him out.
Cena wasn't supposed to be there, right?
No. And there was another surprise moment where HBK,
surprise.
Shawn Michaels,
surprise.
Came out with Mick Foley and Stone
awesome.
Cold, and Stone Cold gave some stunners again. It was cool.
Surprise to the 100,000 people?
Yeah.
Because it's no surprise. It's just like, you know, someone coming back from the dead, like Walking Dead, like a zombie's been killed and it rises from the grave again. It's like no surprise.
But nobody – it's a show. You didn't know that. That wasn't advertised. It wasn't advertised.
I will say this, Wilhelm. It's the one pay-per-view I try not to miss every year.
It's great. Shaq wasn't advertised.
No.
Nobody knew Shaq was going to be
Shaq
there.
I knew Shaq was going to be there.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. Okay. Carry on.
Carry on. Anyway, so for Zack Ryder, great moment. And then for me with my daughter, it was really like, it
Shaq's
was a cool
really
thing.
Tall. That's what my WrestleMania highlight. Shaq's really
big and
tall.
About Shane you watched him jump off of that cage.
And he's hopefully still in the hospital for
Hold
being
on.
A dummy.
Hold Insane. On. You've also got this highlight from last night.
Check me out one time. I do not sing, but I make a song. You love your whole life, and I hope you live long. I swing, bang, and hang from left to right. I have to say that tonight is the highlight of my life. When you mention me, you point to people like him. Godfather OG, where you get that brim. Now you know my name, and you know my game. Much love for letting me into the 2016 WWE Hall of Fame. Peace.
That's right. Snoop went into the WWE Hall of Fame celebrity wing, and then his niece wrestled for the women's championship, and he did her entrance and sang her to the ring. It was actually pretty cool.
Okay, that was not a highlight of the show. That rap was not good. And why is Snoop, who is 6'5", 135 pounds, having anything to do with wrestling?
Because he's come as a celebrity. It's a happening monsoon. There were 101,000 people there.
It was a who's who last night there.
Yes.
Okay. And you didn't watch it, Gibb, so it must not have been that important to you in your life.
Unfortunately, things just kind of tied up, and I couldn't do it. My buddy, my one buddy Mez, was throwing
a
little.
It's only happened 32 times, and you missed it.
He was a little angry that I was not there. But
it's like missing a Super Bowl.
It is. My friend, poor friend MG Gottfried, ran into similar issues and had to watch it at home. It was very sad.
I watched the end of Fast Five and two Kevin Hart stand-up hours back-to-back rather than tuning into anything having to do with wrestling.
Who was in Fast Five? Curious.
Huh?
Who was the star of Fast
Five? Vin Diesel.
Who was the star?
Paul Walker.
Star.
Vin Diesel, Paul Walker.
Who else?
Ludacris.
Who else?
Jordana Brewster. Who else?
Oh, we'll eventually get to it.
You're going to get to it. You're just delaying the inevitable. Who else? The highest grossing actor in Hollywood.
Who? Kevin Hart?
The Rock. The great one.
Come on. Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe. Anyway, I don't know.
Leonardo DiCaprio was in Fast Five?
I don't know if you've... No, The Rock was the highest grossing actor in Hollywood last year. It's a fact.
Oh, last
Go
year.
Ahead. Go ahead. Yes. It is... It just was cool. Gibbs, I don't know if you've got an opportunity to ever see anything like that, but for people who know Zack Ryder's story, for him to be able to do that last night was...
Yeah, no. It was...
Was really
and talking to some
cool.
people that I know that work for the WWE, it was a great moment all the way around for everybody.
And apparently, from talking to some of my friends backstage popped like crazy for him. Like, because they all like him, and they all know, you know, you can only go as far as you're allowed to go at times in the WWE. And for him to kind of get that kind of reward for everything he's done, I thought was a very, very special moment. All right. To my man out there, what's his name? Ted Rosenow. You can tune back in now. We're done talking wrestling. We're going to go ahead and take phone calls. 216-578-0850. I know we got our guy north of the border, Cam in Canada. Got some others, Justin, Mississippi. We'll get to you guys and start talking some Cleveland Browns. The boys are back in town. That's right, back to work here for the Hugh World Order.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs with you. We're going to go to the phone lines now. Go north of the border. And our guy Cam from Canada. Cam, how are you?
Welcome back.
Thank you, man. It's good to be back.
Yeah, the boys did a good job when you were gone. Kudos to everybody, but nice to have you back.
Thank you.
So this Whitner thing I find very perplexing. I'm really trying to understand why there was so much turmoil or why so many people were upset about it. And I just, you know, it's obvious what they're doing.
Yes.
They're going to go hungry and they're going to go cheap. So I'm not sure where the indecision or where people are not clear on the path. It's becoming more and more apparent every day, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that, and that's what I've said. They clearly do have a plan, no question. And that was it. Cam, brief. By the way, Gibbs, we got to come back with Zack Ryder's music for one of the segments today.
Gotcha.
If you guys want to support him on iTunes, he has a great single called Hosky about a bad breakup that he had a long time ago.
So a YouTube sensation?
Yeah, and he's been on iTunes. We made it to the top of the iTunes charts, Hosky. It's my daughter's favorite song.
Did you say we?
No, he.
You just said we.
I did not say we.
You did say we.
No, I did not say we.
Why would I say we if you didn't say we?
Did I say we, Gibbs?
We made it to the top of the iTunes charts. We'll go back.
I thought I said he. Play it back. This is a point of contention. All right, let's go to Justin in Mississippi. Justin, welcome.
Hey, guys. How's it going? First off, I just want to say that the Zack Ryder thing was amazing. I went to a WrestleMania, and to see those moments in person is just, it's probably the closest thing I'll ever get to see in a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But I just want to go ahead and say, though, that like the only thing that bothers me about Donte Whitner is, why did we release him a month after free agency, after we told Dansby, hey, go find you a Super Bowl ring at the end of your career? Why wait until... You know, like people like Eric Weddle's already went and found the team, and you know, like was there something that happened, or is there something that we see that makes us release him later? But why so late, and why on a Saturday? That's the only thing I was confused about. I just got to find a new jersey this year. That sucks, but you know, hey.
Like, yeah, but that's always a good Cleveland one. You know what I mean? Like that's always a good Cleveland jersey to have, Cleveland kid.
Oh,
Donte
I can't
Whitner.
Wait to put it up on my wall. You know, it's like he's a Cleveland guy, so
yeah,
I'm excited. The only other thing I'm worried about is I like the fact I see a lot of defensive backs in the draft, and we keep talking about Jalen Ramsey and how he can play cornerback and safety, which would be great if Joe Hayden can't start the season. Now we're looking, we lost both of our, you know, veteran safeties, but I just think, don't you think that bringing in somebody else who is playing multiple positions like him or a Mac? You already have Cam Irving. There's talks of Mingo playing most positions. That just sounds like a lot of moving parts for a young defense when our problem last year was being too complicated and we just needed to put our hand on the ground and attack. And I'm worried that we might be getting in, you know, possibly too much, I don't know what I'm looking for, trickery, I guess, if we go that route. I just want, you know, two people coming off the edge, Danny Shelton holding it down in the middle for three downs and attack the quarterback.
I appreciate your phone call. Thank you very much. And honestly, from a defensive standpoint, from a front seven, if you get back to the core of what makes a 3-4 defense very good, and you find the guys, you don't find the perfect guys, because that's 2 years from now, two drafts from now, some free agent signings from now, to find the perfect guys to fit this Ray Horton scheme.
Right.
But you find good players that understand their roles and do it 8 times out of 10, you know, or 80% of the time, 90% of the time, and win their one-on-one battle and don't try to do too much, that front seven will immediately go from 31 or 32 against the run to 15th against the run. You'll yes. find a group that within Ray Horton's scheme, you're going to get guys running at the quarterback more free, you know, meaning you're going to disguise it. You're going to scheme a certain team a little bit better than you had in the past. You're going to find guys like Paul Kruger. I'll even throw it in there. Barkevious Mingo, DeMario Davis, one-on-one with backs or tight ends, which is a win, I'll say, 6 times out of 10 for the defense because of their pass rushing ability.
Sure.
And then that's when things get really good is on the back end. Tremont Williams bounces back from a okay season. Joe Hayden is healthy for a season, plays the way he's supposed to, and the onus that you put on the safeties playing the way that they're supposed to, because the 3-4 defenses that I played in didn't have great safeties. We had really good corners and a really good front seven.
Get to the quarterback.
That was it. I mean, Eric Weddle was drafted, you know, he wasn't even playing. He sat as a rookie, as a second round pick, you know, and was in certain packages. He came in, I left, and is when he kind of rose to prominence there in San Diego. But, you know,
you're making too many plays in the middle of the field.
Well, whatever. Come on. But my whole point in being is it's we didn't have these great safeties. We had, you know, veteran. We had Marlon McCree was a safety that played with us. Kwame Lassiter at the end of his career after Arizona was a safety. Bao Zhu was another guy, a free agent signing from the Rams. Just, I don't want to say guys. They were more than guys. They were good players, you know, but, you know, they weren't great Pro Bowl safeties like we've had in the past. It's not necessary in a 3-4 defense as long as they understand their role and everybody does it.
Who'd you have in Green Bay? Chucky Wood and Morgan Burnett?
Correct. Yes. Oh, yeah. So and actually, no, Morgan Burnett was hurt. I'm trying to think of the other. It was Charlie Peppra.
Uh-huh.
Who ended up, I think he left after the Super Bowl season and went somewhere else
in.
As well.
Okay.
Yeah, Charlie Peppra.
So basically second half of the Super Bowl.
And I'm sorry, Nick Collins was – Chucky Wood was playing – corner / safety.
Okay.
He was still playing. So it was Sam Shields, Tremont Williams, Chucky.
No, you're right.
Wood,
he was still playing
Charlie
corner.
Peppra,
right,
and Nick
playing.
Collins. Because
yeah.
Nick Collins, you know, got hurt the next season.
Yeah, that's right. He was still playing.
When he
corner.
Retired from football.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was 97?
1997?
I mean 2007? I'm sorry.
No, 2011.
2011.
2010 was the Super Bowl season. So 2011 was the next year.
Okay. 2010. Chucky Wood, yes. All right. 97 is when he won the national title in college.
Correct.
That's the kid. That's why the kid is at the kid 97.
Yeah, I was being recruited by Michigan when they won that national championship. It just so happened the next year Ohio State had the 98 unlimited talented school. David Boston, Andy Katzenmoyer, Damon Moore, Antoine Winfield, those guys is what got me and swayed me to Ohio State.
So I don't know if you've shared this on air before, but can you? We were talking last week or 2 weeks ago, I guess it was, about your Michigan State recruiting experience.
Yes, my Nick Saban. We were talking Nick Saban.
Uh huh.
Somehow Nick Saban came up, and my older brother and I,
the good doctor Kurt,
not the good doctor Kurt.
He's the younger bro.
He's the younger bro.
He's the baby.
My older brother drove me from again Lorain, Ohio, to East Lansing to see the opener, the home opener of Michigan State, Nick Saban as the head coach, versus Colorado State. I think Michigan State was ranked in the 20s. Colorado State was an unranked football team. And Michigan State got beat at home. And I go to the recruiting tent after driving, I don't know, 6-7 hours to East Lansing to just at least meet the coaches, meet Nick Saban. You know, they haven't offered me at this point yet. And Nick Saban, they had the recruiting coordinator come out to the recruiting tent and say...
How many guys were in there, would you say?
40 in their families.
Wow. Okay.
30 in their families.
Okay.
Okay. 30 to 40 guys plus their families. So maybe we'll say 150 people in
the tent. Is it possible that some people had flown there for this?
Potentially, yes.
Okay.
Potentially, yes. On their own dime, by the way. Because
right.
The teams, you know, NCAA doesn't allow you to the teams to pay for it at this point. They can invite you. You come or you don't. And the recruiter coordinator comes up in front of everyone on the microphone and says, Coach Saban is both embarrassed and upset by the performance on the football field and will be spending – him and his coaches will be spending the remainder of the day with the team after the loss. Thank you all for coming, and walks away. And I was just – and I literally was just – I looked at my brother and I go, F him, F Michigan State. They are off my list. Let's go. And we walked cross campus back to our car and drove home, and I never responded to another Michigan State letter. Or call or whatever.
I think you're completely in the right there, by the way. I think that's ridiculous. Like, just come on and let's go.
And Notre Dame, by the way, spelled my name wrong in the letter that offered me a scholarship to the University of Notre Dame. So I took them off my list for
what
that.
What was the misspelling?
They put it like W-I-L-H-E-H-M or something like that. And okay. I'm just saying, for the financial, you know, for the educational institution and how hard it is to get in there, you know, that all the cronies, Irish cronies, use an excuse as why they can't be competitive and win a national championship in the last 15 years, right? They spell my name wrong, so they're off my list. And I told Urban Meyer that in his office at Ohio State. I'm like, he's like, yeah, he's like, I was recruiting you. And I go, yeah, I know. I go, the reason I took you, and I told him the whole story, just like, I mean, obviously, you know, longer. He goes, get the hell out of here. He's like, we lost you for that reason? I'm like, yes, you did.
Well, good thing I guess I wasn't being recruited, but I don't know. I think Gibbs knows this. I don't know if you know this, because this would have been my first year before you were with us here on CBD. The Browns in the 2000, I believe it would have been the 2013 media guide.
Yes.
Misspelled my name.
Yeah.
As an employee of the Browns.
I do remember that.
And well, I mean, and even more so, the 2015 media guide picture that they put for me.
It's your head on somebody else's body.
It's my head from the work. Like, okay, this was San Francisco 49ers were flying me in to sign me.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so I'm flying from Cleveland, you know, at the butt crack of dawn, arriving in San Francisco. So I fly cross country. They literally walk me up to the general manager's office. I sign a contract. They walk me down to the PR department for a quick statement and a headshot. I'd been wearing a hat or with a hood up,
uh-huh.
And I just flew cross country. They throw a red blank jersey on me. And say, smile for the camera. And I go, And that's the picture that Dan Murphy, love you, Dan, seeks out to use on someone else's head in the 2015 media guide that goes out
I'm
to.
I'm taking a picture of it and posting it on Twitter.
Go ahead. Please do. Yeah, I don't care. Yeah. I have no shame.
Yeah, they spelled my last name instead of Z-E-G-U-R-A, Z-A-G-U-R-A.
Yeah.
Zagura.
Like, it's like when you ask your four-year-old, to spell something, yeah, they spell phonetics. It the way it sounds to them.
Yeah, Zagura. Yeah, so I got that. I also had asked for Nathan, and they put Nate. Just like, welcome to the Browns, my friend. Amigo.
Chris Kersey. Christian Kersey.
Right.
They got that right immediately.
They did. Multiple years, so a lot of changes in there. All right, let's go to Rick in Westlake. Rick, welcome.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
You got it, man.
Hey, got a question for you. Just kind of curious your thoughts. Last year, Petten's staff seemed to be mainly fairly inexperienced coaches. This year, Jackson seemed to be all pretty well experienced. So I guess my question is, what do you think that the benefit or the difference might be? Does experience coaching make that much of a difference, whether it be the coaching itself or the scheme? Just curious as to your thoughts on that.
Well, let's a couple things. Number one, this staff we went through and did it has more than 120 years more.
Yes,
of NFL coaching experience than the last staff.
Correct.
I think that is that you can't overstate the importance of that. And then I'll just turn it over to you,
sure,
as a guy who played in the NFL. How much of a difference can a coaching staff make in the performance on the field?
A few things come to my mind. Is A, just simply going on the number of years that they have experience coaching in the NFL, it allows you to coach a lot of different personalities. So you understand how players learn. Are you a playbook guy? Are you a whiteboard guy? Are you a film guy? Are you on the field guy? Okay. And it allows these coaches who've had players like that go back in their memory bank and go, oh, I coached, in Kirby Wilson's case, Adrian Peterson, and he was a this kind of learner. this is what I would do with AP, you know, when he had a problem fumbling, when he had a problem understanding this scheme, this is what I would do. And you kind of create apples to apples situations for how you teach the players new schemes or how you relate to players, because the game is ever changing. Al Saunders is now in his almost his fourth decade of coaching in the NFL. If you don't think that the NFL game has changed, it's changed in the last 5 years. Think of the eras of football that he has coached in, but yet he was probably one of the first calls that Hugh Jackson made when he was hired here in Cleveland, because again, how soon in this process did we see him after the, in the building?
Immediately.
And then lastly,
is
when it comes to the game itself, how you manage a game, the scenarios that have happened in the game, and the experiences that the same way that I can, you can ask me a question about a story and I can recall it like it was yesterday. My recruitment, the Super Bowl, this game in San Diego when we lost when we were 14-2. You recall, think about the data bank of experience that these coaches have in game experience that just last staff didn't have. It was simply two, you know, some of them 2 years here in Cleveland was their only experience in the National Football League, so they were learning on the run. These guys don't have to learn on the run. They're leaning on their life experiences and their coaches' experience and their relationships of both being a player, like guys like Ray Horton and so on and so forth, who've won Super Bowls as a player and as a coach. That is something that if I were a free agent and I see the right things happening in Cleveland in 2016, you now put them back on the radar, where in the past they might be off because of how dysfunctional they have been.
By the way, I'm going to go ahead and just say it too, because you know it's RG3 is not here if it weren't for Hugh Jackson.
Correct.
Hugh Jackson, he has a lot of credit. We haven't heard a player say a bad thing about him. They love playing for him, and I think that that's something that hopefully can get the most out of it. When you have a coach that you don't necessarily feel strongly about, or maybe you don't have full respect for because they are a little green, or that you don't know they're putting you in the best position to succeed, what do adverse, or maybe they don't reach you the right way or whatever. I know you're a professional and you're getting paid to play, and that should be enough. But how much of a difference does it make when you have, you know, people that you're a coach that you're excited to play for, who motivates you the right way?
When it comes to crunch time, when you want to play for that coach, or that coach motivates you, or you have a connection to that coach, you innately go make that play. You go innately put your body at risk or in harm's way, per se, to go out and play. And the greatest analogy that I can give was fresh out of this Super Bowl, and it was because it's fresh in my mind because I had an opportunity to play for him. But look at Wade Phillips. When he talked to DeMarcus Ware or Von Miller, both before and after the Super Bowl, it was, and questions about that defense, it wasn't, it was Wade Phillips, just so relatable, so easy, such an player-friendly scheme, and easy
puts
to communicate.
Puts us in position to make
plays.
Puts
us in position to make plays, and just an easy communicator, and we don't, it just, that's, those are the relationships that players have with coaches, and how coaches mold themselves and tweak themselves over years to continue to grow as coaches, where you get into the perfect storm where you have all the talent in one place, and it just, you know, that defense won them a Super Bowl.
Yeah. When you have a team that's going to be as young and as inexperienced as this Browns team is going to be, how important is it to have a coaching staff that is so experienced and so good at reaching the players?
It's huge. It really is huge. And it's something I'm excited about and excited about sitting behind this microphone talking about, hopefully for years to come, because this is the infancy of something great.
Yes, let's go. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll go back to the phone lines, 216-578-0850, talking about your Cleveland Browns. Talk a little WrestleMania if you want to talk about that as well. Also want to let you know, coming up in the second hour at 2:30, Matt Waldman, who writes the Rookie Scouting Portfolio, the RSP. He's a staff writer for Football Guys. He knows these rookies each and every year as well as anybody out there. Strong opinions on the quarterback, strong opinions on the rookies. We're going to go ahead and talk to him at 2:30. You can follow him on Twitter, at Matt Waldman, to see what you're getting into. So that's coming up in our second hour. Back with more CBD on ESPN 850 right after this.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
We got the famous Matt Willen pictures on Twitter. Your head, not your body. It's being discussed right now. Bodie on the corner says, beautiful Photoshop job on the neck area. Hashtag sarcasm. No, it's not the
thank
best.
You.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much.
It's strong.
All right, let's go back to the phone lines right now. 216-578-0850. We got the Lightning Rod in New Brunswick. Lightning Rod.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Good.
I got a question for both of you. I got a wrestling question for Matt and a football question for Nathan.
I like it. Good.
The wrestling question for Matt, I was watching WrestleMania last night myself.
Sorry. Okay.
And what happened was when I was watching the show, I noticed that the theme song for WrestleMania was the exact same song that you guys used in your opening. And I was wondering if Matt knew that, and if he did.
He's giving me a
if he didn't
stare
know
right
that,
now.
Would he have vetoed
he didn't know
that? My question for Nathan.
Yes.
Last week, I think when you were away, I think we had Tony Grossi on the show.
We did.
And he articulated very well why he thought Jared Goff should be the quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. And I came away from that thinking to myself, this is the guy we need to take at number two. And I know, this is my question for you, I know on air that you say you'd be comfortable with either Wentz or Goff, but I'm guessing off the air that if we don't go with Goff at number two, your heart really is going to sink.
Well, I mean, I think on the air, I've made that pretty clear on the air as well. Yeah, I think Goff is the guy. I think Goff is the guy. And on Wednesday, we are going to have a guest on the show from who wrote the ESPN article that Pat McManaman tweeted out in reference with an analytic study by people at Football Outsiders about the quarterbacks. And what's that guy's name, Gibbs?
Andrew Heedy, I believe. He'll join us at 2 o'clock on Wednesday.
2 o'clock on Wednesday. Wrote an article doing a huge analytic study of their own about the quarterbacks that prefers Goff completely. In fact, they think since they've been charting it, you know, I won't give away the thunder, but I'll give a little bit of the flavor here. We'll give a little bit of the color of it. So they've been charting players on this metric that, you know, and they tell you percent that the guy's going to be a bust, percent that the guy's going to be an adequate starter, a great starter, et cetera, for Goff. So this is what they got Goff. His score on their analytics system is a 1,211. 28% chance of being a bust, 34% chance of being an adequate starter, 25% chance of being an upper tier starter, and 15% chance of being elite. That's what they give Goff. Now, when you look back at the people who have scored that number since 1996, these are their top 10 scorers of all time. Phillip Rivers is number one.
I saw this post, yeah.
Carson Palmer is number two. Donovan McNabb, number three. Peyton Manning, number four. Marcus Mariota, number five. Russell Wilson, number six. Byron Leftwich, number seven. Roethlisberger, eight. Goff, nine. Rodgers, 10. So let's take Goff out of it because he hasn't played in the NFL. And we're going to give Mariota at least the benefit now of being a franchise quarterback.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll say that that's
he's drafted
he's
at
do.
A franchise position, and they will not draft another quarterback to compete with Mariota for the next 4 years.
And the signs are, it looks like he's going to be a successful quarterback. So that take Goff off the list. So of the top nine of all time, eight of them have turned out to be surefire franchise quarterbacks. Peyton's won multiple Super Bowls. Roethlisberger's won multiple Super Bowls. Rodgers has won a Super Bowl. Wilson's run a Super Bowl. Rivers has been a great quarterback. Palmer's been a great quarterback. McNabb's been a great quarterback. Byron Leftwich,
Super Bowl.
Byron Leftwich is the only one that maybe didn't pan out, but played well before he got hurt and stayed in the league for a long time,
yep.
But not a franchise guy. So eight out of their nine. Now, in that same study for Carson Wentz, they did the same thing. They did all the quarterbacks. In fact, they liked guys better than Wentz. Dak Prescott, actually, on their study, scored better than Wentz. For Wentz, he scored 274% chance of being a bust. By their analytics study, Carson Wentz, 62%.
Ooh.
Adequate starter, 24%. Upper tier, 10%. Elite, 3%.
So 86%, he's an adequate starter or a bust. Is that correct?
86%, yes. Whereas that number for Jared Goff is 61%. The number that Goff, or the other way you could look at it is adequate starter and above for Goff is 72%. So adequate starter, upper tier, elite, 72% for
49.
For Wentz.
No, 39.
39.
Sorry.
38, actually. 61.8, 38%. So they certainly prefer him. And now the group of people on their list that scored similarly to Carson Wentz, it's interesting, are the following. And we'll talk with this guy on Wednesday about what their methodology, et cetera. So Akili Smith, Matt Schaub, Joey Harrington, EJ Manuel, then Wentz, Chad Henne, Jake Locker, Joe Flacco, who's the only one of this group that's come out of it. Now, if Matt Schaub, if you ended up getting Matt Schaub, probably not too upset with that. He had a couple, some good years.
Yeah.
Brock Huard and Ryan Leaf.
Whew. What's that?
Those are the 10 people around Carson Wentz. So of the Carson Wentz group, of the 9 that aren't Carson Wentz, you have 7 epic busts. You have 1 success in Flacco, and you've got Schaub, who was,
yeah.
So whatever they're doing, they're 77% on their guys that they don't like, and they're 88.8% on the guys that they do like in terms of the successes.
Correct.
So,
and what standard is this?
It's called the QBASE.
Okay.
So, and we'll talk with the guy who wrote the article about that and get into his analytics study. But in his study, there's nothing at all whatsoever about, you know, in their mind, there's no question who the top quarterback in this draft is. So, yes, back to the caller's original point. I would be sad. Blanca, Bay Village. What's up, Blanca?
Nate, Matthew, happy Monday. Go try, man.
Yes, go try. That's right. Opening day today. Yes. Fortunately, the Browns players are here, so we don't have to talk too much about baseball because last time we did that, people were not a fan of our takes on baseball, Wilhelm. Do you remember that?
I do.
Let's get those boys in a bus and get them up to the stadium. It'll be the same temperature in December.
Yeah, seriously.
So my first part is, Matt Wilhelm, come on, man. WWE, WWF has provided America with seminal moments throughout its history.
Yes.
Sergeant Slaughter, the Iron Sheik, Hogan, Mr. T. These are building blocks in a person's culture. Are you with me?
Yes, the Macho Man.
I am, but I saw a tweet that by Colin Coward that says, when my life had real things that mattered, I got rid of fake things like wrestling.
Colin Coward is a jerk to wrestlers, by the way.
Yeah, he is.
No, he is. He was really insensitive after Eddie Guerrero died. He made some erroneous
There was an
comments.
Era in my life where I was big into it. My dad still watches it to this day. I don't think he's a subscriber, but still watches it when it's on cable television.
Sure.
Okay. My era kind of when the Ultimate Warrior fell from grace, you know, and kind of they wrote him out of the script, I deviated.
So that's when you were done. You should have watched the Hall of Fame last
which
year.
Which year was this? Mid-90s?
WrestleMania 6 was like his big one. Then WrestleMania 7, he had a great match with, or was that WrestleMania 8? With Macho Man.
Which would have been what year?
He retired Macho Man. So that would have been. So if it's 32 now,
okay.
WrestleMania 6 was the one in Skydome that was Hogan versus the Ultimate Warrior, where the Ultimate Warrior won the title. So it'd be 26 years ago.
Okay.
So it'd be 90.
So it'd have been 1990. I was 9. Yeah. So I'd say by 30, what happened for me is I'd stopped spending time in front of television. I wasn't watching anything.
Sure.
And I was outside.
So what I'd say to you
and
is.
And so it wasn't a pinnacle for me to watch SummerSlam and Royal Rumble and all that stuff.
But you know them.
I do know them, okay. But I don't know, you know, the King of the Ring, the Hell in a Cell, all this ladder match crap that like they're doing now for ratings.
Don't say crap. That is
okay.
That's
all
good
that stuff that used to happen once a year that they're now doing almost every pay-per-view event is to me what's kind of taken away and watered it down.
So what I would say to you is, first of all, you should see the Ultimate Warrior got inducted in the Hall of Fame last year,
okay. And
literally like dropped dead. I got to meet him, dropped dead like two days after.
I remember the story.
The Hall of Fame. But that's what the seminal moments that Blanca refers to. That's what WrestleMania is great. You got to see Stone Cold come out and give a few more centers. You can have a few walks down memory lane that like bring you back to that time when you were a kid and like you enjoyed.
I don't know about me. And I guess there's no star.
Blanca's hanging out. Blanca's fine. He's going to jump back in.
There's no star in wrestling right now like The Rock, like Stone Cold.
Correct.
Like Hulk Hogan.
John Cena.
Like The Ultimate Warrior. Cena is that guy.
But he's not. Right. No, I
agree
with that. That's fair.
Like there's like Jake the Snake, Lex Luger, you know, Mr. Perfect.
Yeah.
That was the era of wrestling.
That you loved.
That I loved. And there's a guy that's coming up that's wrestling in Iowa or at the Ohio Valley Wrestling Foundation right now that has a normal name that's going to put on some spandex and be the next guy because Vince McMahon said so, And I don't like that about wrestling.
That would be Roman Reigns. You'd be referring to.
I don't like that about wrestling.
All right.
Hey, George the Animal Thiel, Coco Beware, yep. They are coming. My football question, men, and I wanted to kind of go back to one of our callers. Coaching is better. What positions, aside from quarterback, are going to benefit from our new coaching staff the most coming up here in the next few months?
Good question. I think offensive line is going to be huge. I think losing Andy Moeller last year was massive. Hal Hunter, I think, will do a very good job there.
Running backs.
I loved Wilbert.
But I think Kirby Wilson and his experience, I think it's a different approach. Wilbert was a little bit more lax and been there, done that kind of thing. And I have heard that coming from players'
sure.
mouths.
Uh-huh.
Okay, taking a lot for granted, expecting them to be professionals. Where I believe that this staff, because of who's leading them, Hugh Jackson, it's taking your feet to the coals.
So I think that's one I'm going to give. I think the wide receivers, because you look, Mike McDaniel,
well.
Not a great wide receiver, a great guy, but really didn't. I don't know that at that time had the experience to be a wide receivers coach. Then Joker Phillips had never really been a wide receivers coach in the NFL. Al Saunders
never
been
a coach
it,
in the NFL.
Period. So I think having Al Saunders, guy who's gotten the best out of Andre Rison, got the best out of Darius Hayward Bay, got the best out of Denarius Moore that year when those guys both went over 1,000 yards with the Raiders. I think he's going to be a huge, huge help to this team. And then the other one that I think is just obvious and really all-encompassing is Ray Horton. Ray Horton is the defensive coordinator compared to what the Browns had last year at defensive coordinator, I believe is going to be a massive, massive difference for this football team. So I think Ray Horton versus Jim O'Neill, I think, is a big upgrade, and I think is going to certainly help these guys quite a bit. Special teams, you're staying the same, and it's been a good unit. I think maybe at the linebacker position, you could see a little bit of a boost there with the linebackers, and we'll just see how it all ultimately ends up playing out. All right, that'll do it for our first hour, even though we're into our second hour. When we come back, we'll go back to the phone calls. Got to thank Blanca. Phenomenal call, Blanca. Seminal moments. He's right. Hulk Hogan against The Rock. Have you ever watched that match?
No.
You've never seen that match?
No.
That would make
What year was it?
It was.
If I was over 12, no.
2002, Toronto Sky Dome.
Sorry,
Rock
I was busy
Hogan.
Winning a national championship. Sorry.
You were done. You'd already won it.
Okay.
Okay. You weren't
Sorry,
busy.
I was prepping for the combine or.
You'd already done it all.
Life was happening at that point that I didn't hit the pause button. Because things that mattered, like Colin Cowherd said, I got rid of the fake things that did.
Gibbs, you remember Hulk Hogan and The Rock, WrestleMania 18?
Yes.
That was as good. That was, if I were to show anybody who's not a fan of wrestling one match, that's when I'd show.
If I could pull up my mom and dad's bank statements, I want to know the last time that my mom and dad spent, at that point, probably $40. What are they now? What's a pay-per-view?
Well, now you get the WWE Network for $9.99, and you get access to every pay-per-view
okay.
for free, and you get access to every pay-per-view that's ever happened. You get access to every Nitro,
You're
every
not selling
Raw,
me. You're
everything.
Not selling me. So what's a pay-per-view for someone who doesn't have it?
I don't even know if you can still do
80
that.
Bucks?
I don't know.
Okay. I want to see my parents' bank statement to see when's the last time they paid for a pay-per-view. And it's probably when Mike Tyson got out of jail and beat up Peter McNeely. When was that?
The tomato can.
Whatever.
I don't know. I
About the
that.
Same time.
Okay. All right. Well.
When Tyson ended his era.
I think that if you had watched Hulk Hogan against The Rock, knowing that you loved Ultimate Warrior that era, so you loved Hulk Hogan.
Yeah. How do you not?
Until
he kept popping back and forth between sides.
It was a walk down memory lane.
Is it yellow or is it black?
Up,
is it yellow or is
black.
It black? Is
he
it
was,
yellow or is it black?
He
is
was
it yellow
black
or is it black?
White. He was Hollywood Hulk Hogan. The NWO came
okay.
to the WWE.
Let's get the break. You could talk wrestling all day. I can't.
When he hulked up, you would be like,
say your prayers, eat your vitamins. That's the era of
the demandments, brother.
That's the era
Train.
Of wrestling that I was in.
Say your prayers, eat your vitamins. That's right. All right, we'll be back with more CBD right after this.